This is the Planetizen Podcast. I'm Nate Berg. This installment features a discussion with Christopher Leinberger, author of The Option of Urbanism, Investing in a New American Dream. Leinberger's book was included in Planetizen's top 10 books list for 2008, and in this interview he discusses what he calls walkable urbanism and contrasts it with the existing car-dependent and suburban development pattern. But first, this announcement.
Planetizen's Consultants Directory is the web's best listing of firms specializing in urban planning, design, real estate development, and more. If you need a design professional or planning consultant, Planetizen's Consultants Directory is the best place to look. And with updated formatting and targeted placement, Planetizen's Consultants Directory is the best place to get your firm's name seen by the people who need your services the most. Directory listing packages start at just $249.99 and are featured on Planetizen for a full year. Search through the directory or add your firm's listing today at planetizen.com/consultants.
Now, a discussion with Christopher Leinberger, author of The Option of Urbanism, Investing in a New American Dream, published by Island Press. Leinberger talks about this evolving American dream with Island Press's Jennifer Pullinger.
Briefly, what is drivable suburbanism?
Drivable suburbanism is the domestic policy, the de facto domestic policy that we have been encouraging in this country over the last 56 years. And it's a form of development. It's one of two types of development that exists in the real world, drivable suburban and walkable urban. And drivable suburban is very low density. It has one transportation option, which is, of course, the car or the truck. And it is the way by which we've been building our metropolitan areas in this country over the last 50, 60, 70 years. And as I say, it's become our de facto domestic policy.
Why is this book important?
Well, the context is that we're talking about how we invest in the built environment being real estate and infrastructure. Now, that sounds kind of boring, but it happens to be 35% of the asset base of the entire economy. It is the largest asset class. If you took all of the publicly traded companies in this country on the NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange, and doubled them, it would be less than the built environment. And the easiest way to understand that, of course, is that most of us own homes, and most of us, the home we own, is the largest asset in our personal portfolio. Well, so too with the national economy. So we're talking about how we invest over a third of our wealth and how it sits on the ground and how it helps fulfill the American dream.
And where did this shift in demand towards walkable neighborhoods come from? Or is there a shift from drivable suburbanism to walkable neighborhoods?
Yes, there's now pent-up demand for walkable urbanism. It's showing itself in many, many ways. That just as the market over the last 50, 60, 70 years wanted drivable suburban, and we in the real estate industry did our best to provide them exactly what they wanted, well, the pendulum was swung all the way over towards one direction, so much so that the only option offered was drivable suburban. Well, the market did what markets tend to do, is that they get in front of the industry providing them the supply of something. And so now the market has pent-up demand as this pendulum begins to swing backward, and there's now pent-up demand for walkable urbanism. The thing is with 35% of the asset base in the country, it's a huge part of the economy. We only add somewhere between 1.5 to 2% to that asset base per year. So it takes decades to catch up with this pent-up demand. My numbers show that conservatively, roughly 20% of the households are underserved, that they want walkable urbanism. They can't have it because it's too expensive. The reason it's too expensive is because there's not enough of it. It's purely Adam Smith at work. Pent-up demand, limited supply, price goes out of sight.
what are some of the side effects of the spread of suburbia, or what are some of the pros and cons related to that?
Well, there's good news and bad news about drivable suburban development. And we obviously put this this de facto domestic policy in place to urge, in fact, mandate that we only build drivable suburban product over the last 50, 60 years. It's still in place today. And when we were starting this domestic policy, and it was a massive social engineering experiment, probably the largest social engineering experiment ever undertaken, certainly in this country, maybe worldwide. And a lot of the good things was it gave us great freedom, gave us privacy. Privacy is a brand new concept. 200 years ago, very few people had privacy. Drivable suburbanism gave us privacy. And it gave us, what I refer to as terrestrial affiliation, somewhat tongue-in-cheek. It gave us a piece of the land, which we as Americans have always prized because we've always had so much land. This is the great hope, part of the American dream. So all those things were realized. So that was the good news. The bad news, which we didn't know was going to be bad news when we started this. I mean, when we started this, it was nothing but beautiful visions of utopia. So the bad news is, of course, there's been a tremendous health impact. We have a obesity epidemic that is shocking. We have an asthma epidemic, which is shocking. Both are directly related to drivable suburban development. The number of car trips out of a home has doubled over the last 20 years. People obviously have to drive virtually everywhere. It seems like you have to drive to go to the bathroom. It's almost every trip from home you must drive, and everybody in the household must be driven or have a car to drive. So, and then not to mention the 40,000 people per year that are killed and the 250,000 that are maimed and the price tag about that. So there's a health side of it. There's certainly a social side of it, that we have grown our cities geometrically. For every 1% population growth, we're now growing somewhere between 8 and 12% as far as land use consumption. That's pretty staggering. That obviously cannot go on forever. But what it's done is that it's separated the economic opportunities in our society from a whole class of people that either live too far away or don't have access to a car. Over a third of us do not have access to a car. We're too old, we're too young, we're too poor, we're too handicapped. So, I mean, that's where the soccer mom came from. So there are groups in society that are absolutely left out of society, as we have sections of many metropolitan areas where we have unemployment rates of under 2%, and on the other side of the metropolitan area, we have unemployment rates of 10, 15, 20%. And we can't get from here to there, basically, because it's too far, it takes a car, it's too congested, it just is not working. But the biggie, of course, is CO2 and climate change. 70%, in fact, over 70% of the CO2 emissions comes from the built environment and the transportation system that sustains the built environment. Most thoughtful scientists looking towards the future are saying that we need to get 80% or more of the CO2 out of the system. Obviously, the built environment is a big, big factor in making, if we're going to get serious about climate change. So the fact of the matter is that walkable urban development is far more environmentally sustainable. Drivable suburban development has a significant impact. It is much more, it contributes much more CO2 and other greenhouse gases to the environment.
And what sort of policies and plans need to be in place to really kick this movement in the high gear, to really balance out?
Transit is critical. That every metropolitan area in the country is planning or building transit systems, every of the major, of the top 30. They are either in planning mode or they have a starter system, or obviously like Washington and San Francisco and New York and Chicago, they have extensive transit systems. So basically those metro areas that are not planning or not planning aggressively enough to put transit systems in place, you've got to get moving on that. It should be a rail-based system. That's what the middle class wants. That's what the middle class will get. So a rail system is absolutely critical, because around those rail stops is where the bulk of the demand for walkable urbanism will take place. It's not essential. There are greenfield examples of walkable urban development, such as Reston Town Center here in the D.C. area, where it can take place. Birmingham, north of Detroit, does not have a rail system, but it's a very exciting suburban town center that's quite walkable. But it sure does help, and it's a major driver. The second thing that needs to be done is overlay zoning needs to take place in these proposed walkable urban places. So it's legal to build walkable urban. It's really nice if what you're planning to build is legal. It's kind of a bummer if you have to keep on doing illegal things. It gets old. So those two things are really the key issues, is transit and putting walkable urban overlay zoning on top. The real estate industry is really moving quickly to get the understanding of how to build walkable urban. Wall Street will finally figure it out. It's kind of bizarre, but you know, all those investment bankers who live in the greatest walkable urban place in the country have a hard time financing it. But even they will figure it out at some point. But we need to just, and the final thing I would say is that we need to stop subsidizing drivable suburban. It is mad that we're subsidizing any kind of development. We should stop the social engineering that is embedded in the subsidy of drivable suburban development and let the market choose for itself.
That was a discussion with Christopher Leinberger, author of The Option of Urbanism, Investing in a New American Dream, published by Island Press. Leinberger is a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution and is director of the Graduate Real Estate Program at the University of Michigan. More information about Leinberger's book can be found at islandpress.org. In addition to this podcast, Planetizen publishes a wide variety of original op-eds, news features, and blog posts about planning issues. You can find all the latest urban planning commentary and news, and our list of the best planning books of the year at planetizen.com. Planetizen is the leading online destination for the urban planning, design, and development community. Find all the latest news, views, jobs, and more at planetizen.com. That's PlanetiZen.com. For Planetizen, I'm Nate Bird. Thanks for listening.